This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned for today's program. And we are joined by Todd Allen Price. And Mr. Price has provided me with an article that he's written entitled Wiring the World, Ameritech's Monopoly on the Virtual Classroom. And I was looking at this. This is a really, really big topic. And Todd Allen Price is with us to talk about Ameritech, video distance learning, and then also the entire corporatization of education. Todd, thank you for being with us.
A pleasure.
Let's begin to talk about what we are actually talking about, I guess, which let's start perhaps with the basic part of it, or at least, which is video distance learning. What are we actually talking about here?
Well, some of your listeners might have heard of the product called teleconferencing. That's a product that's used by corporate executives to communicate with each other across great distance. It's frequently used by companies like Hewlett-Packard and companies certainly like Ameritech, but also IBM, Microsoft, and others to be able to save on transportation costs by having their meetings over basically corporate television, where parties on one side and the other are able to interact via the audio, via the video, and also with some graphics and text, and it saves on being a person in the physical room with another person and the transportation that goes with that. And so instead of that, you simply turn on the monitor and you dial up the connection that you wish to make, whether it's in Brussels, Netherlands, or Germany from the United States, or whether it's in Africa or elsewhere. That's what video distance learning is, a scaled-down version of that, that is making some headway in many universities and many community colleges as well as public K-12 schools.
So the point being with video distance learning, VDL, is that you can ostensibly have a classroom in one area of the country or the world, and have an instructor in another area of the country or the world, and therefore provide educational services over this internet type of technology.
That's the basic idea. Right now, the way it's been rolled out is in various state networks of the Midwest that I'm aware of, where I reside, as well as other states in the country. Video distance learning is used primarily to substitute for foreign language teachers. The standard rationale for using this type of technology is that school budgets are under the gun. They are suffering from not having enough funds in order to hire a physical person, a physical teacher of French or German or Spanish or what have you. In lieu of that, they wire the schools so that you can virtually bring in this professor or this teacher from another institution. And the rationale behind all of this is that it's the bottom line. It saves money.
We're talking with Todd Allen Price, and we're talking about Wiring the World, Ameritech's Monopoly on the Virtual Classroom. Todd, let me ask you, because on one hand, there seems to be a lot of potentiality in this type of technology. And I know that from reading the article, the piece that you sent me, Ameritech has made a lot of promises. Perhaps what we could do is talk about what some of those promises have been and perhaps whether or not they're actually being met.
Sure. Well, the idea behind using high technology, behind wiring the schools, and behind students using the newest applications is manyfold. It depends on what party you speak with to see what are the ideals or the goals that are to be met by putting out what ostensibly is extremely expensive fiber optic, extremely expensive cable, and many times different satellite systems and feeds from other places. What would be the rationale behind spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on this technology? Well, it's so that the students are able to enter the globalized marketplace of the 21st century prepared and ready to work. Now, that's the rationale that you hear circulated through the mainstream media and through the corporations, and that's absolutely accurate. That is exactly why the wiring is going on. Now, from a parent's perspective or from a teacher's perspective, you might wonder if there aren't other missions in the public educational institution that are perhaps at least as important as preparing your student to enter the globalized world market ready to work. There are issues such as entering your station as a enfranchised citizen, as having develop an appreciation through your education and through your schooling for being a responsible and productive member of society and being able to be someone to problem solve and take on the taxing challenges that evolve when you are a participatory person in a democracy. Ameritech has made fairly vague promises, which is that they will wire the schools in turn for relaxed regulation. Now, this may come as some surprise to some, but for most, they've heard the line many times before because they've lived through the early 90s when the rhetoric and the slogans were so voluminous and coming at people with such rapidity that most folks were just trying to grasp what all of this stuff meant, but they basically got the gist of it. The information superhighway is good for the economy, and thus we need to allow these different corporations to merge. We must allow them to be able to be competitive with each other so that they can all offer all of the different types of services, whether that ranges from telephony, from cable television, from the internet, from satellite, that this is where the society is headed, like it or not. That's exactly the way it's been presented. And thus, Ameritech is but one case study. There are others with IBM, with Microsoft, with GTE, with SBC, which has partnered with Ameritech, where these companies made lofty promises, and there were many politicians that were all too ready to support those promises and to ride that information superhighway bandwagon to a very, very lucrative future, such that the public was sold on this idea that forget about the discrepancies between the wealthy and the poor districts, forget about the institutional racism, forget about the fact that many women, many young girls are not getting the education that they need in a very gendered public system that is not serving them well. Forget about the class differences. And this is something that it gets short shrift in the mainstream press. Forget about all those issues. Just wire the schools, take the PCs, and that's that. We'll fix it. And that is what Ameritech largely promised with the expectation, and they got it, which was to have relaxed telecommunications deregulation. That means they largely set their prices, they largely determine where they invest their dollars, and they determine how, with the subsidization of telephone customers, meaning Jane and Joe and every other person that has a local exchange telephone, and that's just about everybody except for folks in Appalachia and some of the poor districts of the United States, but that we would subsidize their ventures into various markets. And that's what we got for it.
There are so many issues in this that you raise. And let me try, if I can, to ask you some questions that will help expand on them.
Sure.
On the one hand, what I'm hearing you say is that perhaps on some level, while the technology is what it is, when it comes to relying on it as the basis for our educational system, we may be getting much less than we're hoping to get, because on one hand, what happens is that perhaps, and I'm probably way oversimplifying this, is that we get sort of passive recipients of information who may know how to manipulate certain computer applications, but at the expense of other types of educational goals, critical thinking, and things like that. I mean, so that's one aspect of this, correct?
Yes, certainly. And there's many studies that have been done which have basically pointed out, and this is the bottom line research, if you can find another researcher out there that says different, give me his number or her number. I'd like to know what their findings were. But if you talk with any bona fide credentialed researcher in the field out there, what they will tell you is that the impact or the influence of technology, be it radio, telephone, personal computer, or a Skinnerian teaching machine, on the learning process is no significant difference. Now, that is such a crucial fact to realize, that there have been scads of studies done since the 1920s that have looked at what technologies do to the learning process, meaning that if you have a control group that doesn't use the technology and you have an experimental group that does have the technology and you give them basically the options to learn with these different technologies, you will find that there is no significant difference between their learning curve, between what they ascertain from the content that was presented. Now, that being said, certainly there are different advantages to a number of different technologies in context-specific environments. For example, I'm a person that uses video. I'm a video producer. I'm a person that uses interactive television with regards to video and a minor type of application, which is with public access programming, where you are able to interact with individuals via the audio, the telephony. There are many advantages to that, certainly. You can reach a lot of people in a number of different times in a number of different locations. Certainly there are advantages with the Internet. You may, as a content provider, send out a message or send out information to a range of different individuals. The question is not necessarily what are the merits of a video distance learning product or of an Internet product or of a motion picture, which was something that was in vogue in the 20s. The question is more about what do we give up in the public educational space? What does this technology, with the baggage which is associated with it, because you cannot eliminate the baggage that comes with this. You cannot eliminate the fact that there are for-profit corporations like the Edison Project, like White Hat Management, certainly like Ameritech and IBM and Microsoft and others that have a very specific blueprint on public education. There is no such thing as a free lunch. This technology and these applications are given with a condition, and the condition is that the corporations will have these technologies used toward their ends. Now, there are a lot of folks that are very much going to listen to this particular radio cast, and they might be skeptical about such ties. I would just point those individuals to the very corporations that make this technology available and look at what the chief executive officers, look at what the individuals in the companies say about public education. They speak very eloquently and very clearly about what they want done with public education. They want to reinvent it. They want to make sure that the public schools are serving a very focused mission. They may acknowledge that the public education school has other missions, but the primary position is to get students technologically savvy, literate, ready to work as soon as they get out of the school. And the reason why they want that is because they don't want to spend any money on these kids or these young adults when they come to work. They want them to come to work. They want them to do their job. And that's the way the globalized economy works.
What we have then is, in essence, the public schools at any number of levels, all the way down to grammar school, get turned into job training programs for Ameritech and Microsoft.
Well, I'll give you an example. In Wisconsin and in Ohio, I'm certain that there are other analogous programs. There is such a thing called School to Work. It's a branch which is intended to take students that are considered to be non-university-bound students. Now, how they come up with this formula is disturbing to me, because I have suspicions about what racial profile, what class profile, and in many ways there will be issues of the gender profile to see who fits into, quote-unquote, school-to-work vocational technical track. These decisions are being made early on, and these are the types of programs that are being allied with by Ameritex. In fact, in University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, with the latest alignment of the Ameritech International Global Studies chair, an endowed chair that Ameritech just bought with the partnership of University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, there is a very strong agenda to work with the technical schools to partner and to push students into tracks. Now, this is something that is maybe common in other parts of the world, which is the tracking system. I would say that that's something that many educators and many credentialed scholars in this society, in this democratic, pluralistic society of the United States of America, find troubling. They find tracking to be antithetical to the democratic notion that any individual with merit and with the will and the forthrightness should be able to pursue a higher education. That stands at odds with the vision of several different corporations. I would argue the corporatism, which is coming down, which argues that we need to track individuals because it's more efficient, more cost-effective, and it will result in individuals being ready to work when they leave their learning institution.
We're talking with Todd Allen Price. We're talking about Wiring the World, Ameritech's Monopoly on the Virtual Classroom. Todd, let me ask you, because there's another aspect in this whole story, if you will, because what I thought I heard you say was, whether it be Ameritech and or other companies, they've offered this technology and in return have said, well, we don't want anything for this technology here, but what we want is we want some sort of concessions regarding regulations for our other businesses. And as a result of that, there have been exploitations, if you will. Perhaps that's too strong a word. I don't know. But it seems that there have been prices that people have had to pay because other aspects of these corporations' businesses have been deregulated in exchange for perhaps what we might refer to, for sake of a simplistic argument, as somewhat dubious services being provided to schools. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Well, if you take a look at what was being offered, who would argue against wiring a school or providing a PC for a given student, especially when you're looking at the years in which Ameritech was lobbying, was buying special sessions of the legislative bodies in Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio? When people would say in the years of 92 to 93 and 94 that every student needs to have a PC on their desk, every student, rich or poor, needs to have access to a large area network or a wide area network, there, you would find very few people that would say, wait a minute, that might not be as relevant to what a lot of these students actually need. What you found is just a wide upspring of supporters that were, of course, excited about the information superhighway of the future. And why shouldn't they be? I have been a teacher before, and I'm absolutely behind the idea of giving the students and giving individuals and society at large as much and as rich the potential of resources that they can have to learn and to do what they need to do. But the problem is that what was given to them was a showcase. It was an exhibit. It was an ideology of what the schools should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. And let me just refer, because perhaps a lot of the audience has not read this paper, or they might have a chance to read this chapter at some point, but let me refer those folks to this showcase, which was Ameritech Super Schools. Ameritech Super Schools was a political manifestation of setting up monitors between poor schools and urban schools. And it was really put together largely by Ohio Bell in an Appalachian region called Ironton and Coal Grove, and it was used to give the governor of at the time, Governor George Voinovich, who has become a senator to the U.S. Senate now, he was given a platform to be able to sell this idea of giving the poor schools technology in lieu of the funds that they don't have. In a system, for example, in Ohio, that has been found unconstitutional, meaning that they don't adequately fund their poorest schools in the way that they are required by law, by the Ohio Constitution. Voinovich, of all people, knew this very well, and rather than make up for that disparity in funding, what he did was he used the Ameritech, and this was at the time Ohio Bell, with his CEO friend Ed Bell, they used an opportunity to demonstrate video distance learning as the next best thing since sliced bread. They basically put it out in front of a business group. They put it out in front of teachers, and they said, this will be a wonderful thing, and this will make up for the haves and the have-nots. And that, on the face of it, is an outright bald lie. Hooking kids up to different computers does not guarantee access. Wiring their schools does not make up for the ceilings caving in or the floors being filled with water, as is often the case in Ohio, indeed. What was sold to people was this idea that video distance learning, but this high technology, would make up for the fact that we have wrongfully funded the poor schools in our country, in Ohio and in Wisconsin and in other places. But Ohio is the worst. Ohio has the 50th worst schools in the country. That's where Ameritech Super School started. It's more than ironic. It's a metaphor for what a charade this technology for the schools is in lieu of the gap between the haves and the have-nots.
There's also the issue of companies like Ameritech having other businesses, for example, phone service, and that in other areas of their corporate existence, people are being overcharged, lousy service, those kinds of things. But companies such as Ameritech, perhaps, are able to get away with these types of things because they've gotten these concessions as a result of these offerings of super schools, VDL, or whatever.
Well, I'll give you an example, just so that individuals that are listening to this program that may think this is just someone that has a grief with Ameritech. It's not necessarily entirely about the company Ameritech. There are certainly a lot of notorious histories of the phone companies in general. But what has happened, and this is straight out of the words of a small businessman in Madison, Wisconsin, is that you have the worst of both worlds. You have now an unregulated monopoly. That is what has happened, that the baby bells have been reconstituted. They were broken up originally, and because of the problems associated with monopolies, especially monopolies on services like telephones. You have a hard time imagining not having access to a telephone. Think of what an ubiquitous service having phone lines are. What should you be paying for after the lines have been laid? I mean, it really stretches the imagination how much how much the bills are for using the telephone. I mean, the lines have been laid. What has been laid since then and has been subsidized on the back of local telephone consumers and users are some very high-end applications. And those high-end applications are going to the top 20% of society, albeit those folks in the corporate boardrooms and those folks in the very telecommunication companies that are seeking to expand their services into new markets. The consumer that is paying like 35 cents for a public telephone call when it was 25 cents previously may or may not think real hard about what that extra dime means. But translate that extra dime for a simple public telephone call and also try to make a call between, for example, a Madison and a Milwaukee or a Milwaukee and Chicago or a Columbus and Indianapolis, and think about how much that bill has actually gone up. Now, with the rate of return regulation that existed previously, there was some legitimacy, some legitimate oversight by public service commissions and utility commissions to say, well, beyond this particular profit, you have to put that money back. You have to give that money back to the consumers. But in lieu of what is now no longer rate of return, but is price-regulated, an Ameritech or an SBC or a GTE or a number of other different types of baby bells and local exchange carriers can largely judge what the market says is a reasonable price. I beg to differ with that type of logic. I think that a lot of consumers might consider whether the marketplace is the ultimate arbiter to determine what they should be paying for a service so critical as telephones.
We've been speaking with Todd Allen Price. We're talking about wiring the world. Todd, let me ask you, because we just have a couple of minutes left, what do you think the most important things that our listeners should be gathering out of this conversation today, and how could they go and get more information about it or have some sort of impact in a positive way on all of this?
Well, first of all, what the listeners should really consider, and I'm sure many of them already are, is to look very carefully when their school district is approached with a quote-unquote partnership with a venture capitalist type of firm. When I say that, I mean there are a number of firms that have a lot of stock in getting these applications out, and their bottom line is basically to make the next quarter. That does not mean that you may not be approached by a number of different businesses, and there have been many of these types of folks that have a particular interest in helping their kids out or in helping a school out or in helping a school district out. That's been done, and that's something that is always appreciated from any school district. However, when you have a multinational corporation that says, I'll wire your schools, sign on the dotted line here, be aware of the monthly charges. Be aware of what this technology really does in the classroom. Think carefully about what the teacher's role is going to be in lieu of this technology, or the student role, or think about what the curriculum content may be. If you have a company like an Ameritech, which is a ruthless, very ruthless company, and they are looking for content providers that can afford to pay to use the space on the bandwidth, consider really if you want your kid to be getting an education from Disney. Do you think, and I hope that the listeners do not think this is too out of touch with the reality, because it's very, very, very likely, very, very possible that teachers will be relying on prepackaged curriculum content, meaning that there are teachers that are going to be largely encouraged to use this technology, largely encouraged to use an Ameritech video distance learning application or an internet, and they'll be largely encouraged to use an effective and efficient package, and that package could be coming from Disney, and I dare say that's going to be a real challenge to the history class of the future.
We've been speaking with Todd Allen Price, and we've been speaking about wiring the world. Todd, we just have a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, I know the chapter that you sent me, the article, is quite lengthy and quite detailed. Is there any place where this is up on, say, the web or something like that, where if people wanted to read it, they could do that?
Sure. Right now what is being put together is a book called Campus Incorporated. It looks at a number of the issues of the publications of merit with regards to corporations' involvement with public education. I would refer you to, first of all, to the number that I have, which is 608-258-9644. Again, that's 608-258-9644. And would be able to fax out more of that information when the book comes out in the summer.
Todd Allen Price, thank you for joining us to talk about Wiring the World, Ameritech's monopoly.
Thanks,
on the
Mike.
Virtual classroom. That's it for this edition of the program. Full Logic Reverse is produced at KVMR FM Radio, Nevada City, California. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us at Full Logic Reverse in care of KVMR FM Radio, 401 Spring Street, Nevada City, California, 95959, or at 530-265-9073. I'm Mike Thornton, and we invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.